This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. There are a lot of things that contribute to carbon dioxide emissions. For the first time, an inventory of how much greenhouse gas is entering the air in Morgantown has been compiled. As Beneduccio reports, the environmental consulting firm Downstream Strategies hopes this particular study will inspire other communities to do the same.
On a sunny afternoon, traffic is bustling through one of the busiest intersections in Morgantown on University Avenue. There are cars, buses, and even industrial trucks rumbling through this congested intersection every day. These vehicles are all playing some role in emitting greenhouse gases into the air, and a new report from Downstream Strategies tries to track down all of the statistics from the year 2012 to see the breadth of Morgantown's greenhouse gas footprint. According to the report, activity-based emissions from vehicle use, solid waste disposal, and other factors contributed to more than 800,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions in 2012. Source-based emissions from coal plants, natural gas, and other fuels emitted nearly 700,000 metric tons. Jeff Simcoe is Energy Project Manager for Downstream Strategies. He co-authored this report.
We knew that the presence of a power plant within the city limits would contribute a lot of greenhouse gas emissions in the source-based category. We weren't surprised about that. What we were surprised about on the activity-based side is the fact that we were able to identify electricity use in the community as a large contributor, as well as the transportation sector.
This is the first time Downstream Strategies has attempted to capture the greenhouse gas emissions data from a particular town in West Virginia. Simcoe says he doesn't think it's been tried before in West Virginia by anyone else either. Downstream Strategies is attempting to figure out these numbers because it's about to use the study for another project.
The phase two of our project will focus on commercial and residential energy use, and we see opportunities there with activities such as switching lighting, sealing your home, insulation, those types of things to reduce electricity use in residential and commercial businesses, because we see an opportunity there to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and electricity.
It's tricky to compare how Morgantown's carbon dioxide emissions rank compared to other towns across the region. That's because Simcoe can't point to any other towns in the region who are doing similar kind of comprehensive, wide-sweeping greenhouse gas emission study using all of the data Morgantown used.
For instance, this is a community-based inventory versus a city operations only or a single entity inventory. So we would be able to compare to other inventories that used a similar approach. And as far as the U.S. community protocol that we used, we know that in California it's being recommended that towns and cities use this inventory so that they can aggregate the results over larger areas, be able to compare between different cities and municipalities and start to build a baseline data for a larger area that they can update over time.
This study started before the Environmental Protection Agency released proposals on states to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the next 16 years. Simcoe is hopeful this report will help the state of West Virginia as it looks to reduce emissions. He points to two specific building blocks the EPA wants states to follow to achieve those emissions goals.
Projects like this could help with building block three, which would be more of a renewable energy type approach, and building block four, which is really focused on demand side energy efficiency. And so our phase two project, which will identify and quantify opportunities for residents and businesses to reduce energy consumption associated greenhouse gas emissions, really is a part of this building block four.
Phase two of the Downstream Strategies project includes conducting a survey to ask Morgantown residents about their energy use. They will also be looking at more energy data. Phase two will be done by May of next year. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
College tuition is going up across the country and across West Virginia. Recently, the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission approved increases for several colleges and universities. As Jared Klein reports, these increases come as many schools have seen a decline in enrollment.
On June 16th, the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission approved tuition increases that include a nearly 8% jump at West Virginia University and a nearly 7% at Fairmont State. Marshall and West Liberty were also permitted to increase tuition for certain programs. Concord and Shepherd also increased tuition by just under 5%. The two schools avoided the approval process because 5% is the maximum amount allowed without approval. As the cost of college has gone up, the commission's website says enrollment at universities across the state has dropped by over 2,500 in the past 3 years. So is the rise in tuition to blame? A report finds that West Virginia is one of only 8 states that reduce the amount of money going towards higher ed in its budget as the economy recovers from the Great Recession. For this year, there was nearly a 4% reduction. Kent Gamble is the director of enrollment at Concord University. He says the school had little choice when deciding to increase tuition.
Cost of business keeps going on up and up, whether it's a gas bill or whether it's the insurance bill. And so I think that the university has to make an adjustment.
Concord is considered a regional university. Put simply, it serves the counties that surround it. Regional universities are often some of the biggest employers in the area they serve. Ideally, graduates from these universities can then go to work in the state. Gamble says universities like Concord are vital to West Virginia's recovery for this reason.
So if you're using Fairmont as an example, or Glenville, or even Shepherd, you know, we have a responsibility to drive the economy just like the mom-and-pop business does or the larger employer in that county. So I think we have a responsibility to drive students to get a degree, work in West Virginia, to get a four-year education or a master's degree.
Higher Education Chancellor Paul Hill has high hopes for the future of higher ed in West Virginia despite the declining state support. He says that there are positive signs of an economic upturn on the horizon.
We think there is some optimism within the state budget in the long term. While the state budget office indicates we're still going through this downturn, there are some signs that the budget will recover in the next year or so, and that we would hope that that there would not be any further cuts to higher education in West Virginia.
Hill and his team at the commission have made a master plan for increasing enrollment at West Virginia universities. This includes making sure students have access to college, making sure that they get enough college on time, and putting students into the workforce. Hill says the actual process of learning will change, having an impact on the future of higher education.
We're going to see a lot more use of technology in higher education. We're already seeing a lot now, but I think we'll see more in what we call blended learning opportunities, more online opportunities.
Jasmine Jimenez is from Connecticut and attends Concord University. She decided to come to school in West Virginia because it costs less.
The tuition increases are coming at every state.
Despite the nearly annual tuition increases at its colleges, West Virginia continues to be a higher education bargain because students like Amina's say it still costs less to get a degree here than in many other states. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jared Klein in Athens.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:42. Partly sunny skies today. There is a chance of rain and thunderstorms this afternoon. Temperatures in the 70s to mid-80s. Mostly cloudy overnight with rain and thunderstorms likely and patchy fog after midnight. Lows in the 60s. Cloudy on Wednesday with more rain and thunderstorms likely through Wednesday evening. Daytime temperatures in the 70s to around 80 degrees tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Tamarack, the best of West Virginia, and Beckley, showcasing handmade arts and crafts from neighboring counties, not neighboring countries. Facebook.com/Tamarack WV.
Just about anywhere you go in West Virginia, you'll find a local brew pub or brewery. As the craft beer industry has taken off, West Virginia State University, through a grant with the State Agriculture Department, is studying whether local farmers can benefit from the burgeoning beer industry by growing hops for the brewers to use. Cecilia Mason visited with two farmers in the Eastern Panhandle who are taking part in this experiment.
Matthew Grove waters 60 hops roots. They're called rhizomes that he and Robbie Babbitt just planted on a plot of ground in front of Babbitt's house at Brimgrass. That's a farming subdivision in western Berkeley County.
We're taking part in a research program with West Virginia State University, and they want to see how well hops will grow in West Virginia in general. So they've selected three varieties, and our obligation is to report on it for 3 years. Maybe some varieties work in some parts of the state and some don't. Maybe none of them work in West Virginia. We're just going to try to find out. So everybody has the same three varieties, which are Cascade, Centennial, and what was the third one?
Columbus.
Yeah, I'd never heard of Columbus before. The other two are real famous, or real popular sellers.
West Virginia State Extension agent Brad Cochran says the State Agriculture Department awarded a $23,000 grant for the project. He says it proved to be popular, and the university received 70 applications from folks wanting to participate. Three larger growers were chosen in Jefferson, Fayette, and Marion counties. They received 60 rhizomes and the materials needed to construct a structure to grow the hops on. Hops are like bean plants. They climb, so they need some kind of really tall or long structure to climb on. Grove and Babbitt are among the 35 smaller growers throughout West Virginia who received just 60 free plants, so they have to construct their own structure. Cochran says all the participants will provide data on how their plants are doing.
I'm going to have the growers do sort of like a real general monthly report kind of style, which is just going to be some general observations. So it's going to help us to, say Cascades, maybe this month they grew 6 feet. Maybe next month they grow 5 feet. It's going to give us some idea, because if it happens, pretty consistently across the state, then we can start to, have some trendy data.
Grove is hand-watering the newly planted hops rhizomes. He and Babbitt plan to install an irrigation system. Each of the three varieties is planted in its own circle. Grove and Babbitt will erect an 18-foot pole in the middle of that circle, which will support twine that the hops can climb.
It'll be set up so that the lines that run to the top can be hoisted and lowered for harvesting. So that's the other attraction to this approach, is similar to a flagpole, a way to run the line up and down. And so we don't have to get on ladders. That's
big, tall ladders.
Tall ladders. 20 foot straight up.
Growing hops is not new to Babbitt or Grove. This particular garden sits next to Babbitt's older hops plants that are climbing wires strung on telephone pole-like structures. Grove has been growing the plants along the side of his house.
I planted less than a dozen rhizomes maybe 3 or 4 years ago near my house, and have been working at the art of pruning and improving the yield of those plants. So it's been a learning exercise. And Robbie's the same. Robbie's had.
Yeah, these are our old. I've had about 24 going for 3 years, but had a lot of failure the first year. I think we got a bad set, so I've replanted a lot of them, but as you can see, this is the first year that they're starting to look robust. So it takes, they really work on their root structure the first couple years. And they say it's not till the third year that you really start seeing a lot of growth and climbing.
So the question is, and you can both answer this, do you feel your experience raising hops the last few years has prepared you for this experiment?
Oh, I think so. Because we've had all the mistakes and messed with things in different ways. knowing how to plant them and making decisions on how to trellis. There's many, many ways to trellis. And one of the first things Matthew and I had to do before we started planting was determine what type of a trellising system we're using. And so this is actually going to be like a teepee system. And so, yeah, it's helped, although the first 3 years we haven't really been through harvesting.
West Virginia State Extension agent Brad Cochran says the ultimate goal of this little experiment is to encourage farmers across the state to consider growing hops that can be used in some of the local craft beers.
If we can grow everything else that's going to go into the beer, that you know, we can have a completely 100% West Virginia-grown beer you know, sometime here in the near future. And that in itself is very, very exciting.
Cochran says sometime in the future, forums and panel discussions will be held so farmers and brewers can get together to learn more about developing a hops production industry that can support local breweries. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.